the Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, I recently had a friend whose boyfriend actually is in the World Cup of soccer right now.
Congrats.
And he plays goaltending.
Matt
and
Turner.
I said, you should marry that guy. He's a real keeper.
Oh, okay. I thought it was gonna be like a pun on one of the goalkeepers' names. The Senegalese goalkeeper's name is Mendy. I feel like you could have worked with that.
I feel like you could have worked with Aaron Ramsdale.
Former AFC Wimbledon goalkeeper.
Really?
Now playing in the World Cup. Not only that, wow. a current AFC Wimbledon player is playing in the World Cup. Chris Gunter for Wales.
Nice. Who's he cupping for?
He's cupping for England. So moving on, though, Hank. Do you remember when we were kids, there was a late night television show called Late Night with Johnny Carson?
Yeah, yes, sure.
You remember, like, we'd watch it sometimes?
That. Yeah. I guess we'd watch Johnny Carson every once in a while.
Occasionally?
Very occasionally. It was late.
On black and white television?
Yeah, we'd have to stay up quite late for that.
Yeah, sometimes, like, Mom and Dad would watch David Letterman or something like that.
Sure, for sure, yeah.
You remember how Johnny Carson had that guy, that second guy named Ed McMahon?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And like Johnny Carson
like,
would Johnny Carson would do all the talking, and then Ed McMahon would say like one of eight things. He would say like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Or if he disagreed with something, sometimes he'd say, I don't know about that. So he had sort of like eight or nine stock responses, and he made like a 45-year career out of having these eight or nine stock responses.
Yeah, he had a good voice.
He had a great voice for hello kind of things.
Hello.
You know,
like, yeah.
I'll say that sort of jam. And
John just wants everybody to know that Ed McMahon is going to be on the podcast today. He died in 2009.
Okay, I was going to say, well, I'm not sure that he's with us, but that doesn't necessarily stop you from being on a podcast in an age of AI.
True.
But here's the thing. Usually I feel like we're both trying to be Johnny Carson on this show, and it works great. I don't have any criticisms. This particular day, I just want to give you a heads up that I'm going to be a kind of an Ed McMahon figure, if you will.
Oh, interesting. Well, yeah. I don't know that I love this, but okay. So it's all on my shoulders. I'm the Johnny Carson. I have to do all the work, and you're going to be like, hey, I don't know about that.
Yes. That is correct, sir.
What? Why? Why am I stuck with such a dubious host, co-host?
You got it.
Oh, no. Why? What's happening?
That's right. Yes.
Oh, my God. He's broken. He's gone.
I'll say, here we go. Got any questions from our listeners today?
Yeah, this first one comes from Michaela, who asks, Dear Hank and John and Leon.
But mostly Hank and Leon.
This note is mostly for Leon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have his email, though. I thought I'd ask you to please pass on this question. What would you do, Leon Musk, with $44 billion?
Oh,
Hank and John,
please
feel free to share.
Question for my friend Leon Musk.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be hard to Ed McMahon my way through this question, Hank. I feel a little duped.
Yeah, well, it happens.
Here's the thing about Leon Musk. Has anyone in human history been more forward-thinking than I was in creating an Elon Musk parody account on Twitter in 2015? I mean,
yeah.
Why didn't I play the lottery that week? Like, I saw the... what do I know today that I don't know that I know?
If you don't know what John's talking about, for a while there, a couple of weeks ago, everybody was creating Elon Musk parody accounts and getting banned from Twitter for it.
On Twitter.
There are still
a ton of Elon Musk parody accounts because they can't ban all of them.
Yeah.
And I started, we had a joke on this podcast for newish listeners that it's not a joke, actually. It's a bet that if there are no humans on Mars by January 1st, 2028, then this podcast...
My dream has been hit quite hard by the last 4 weeks.
Your Mars dream has had a terrible month. if there are no human beings, this was Hank. This is how different the world was in 2016. Yeah. Yeah. Hank thought it was totally reasonable 50-50 bet that if
I don't know about that. Part of it was that like the podcast has been called Dear Hank and John. I'll get a long time out of that. And eventually maybe John will get a chance and maybe not. I don't know.
Right. Well, we have to keep podcasting until 2040 for it to even out.
Yeah, exactly.
For there to be
like, hey-o! turn the tables on you. Take that.
So I think the first thing Elon Musk would do, obviously, would spend $44 billion on a pro-Earth campaign, which, by the way, I think we need. Not like there are a lot of conversations about Earth and like the killing of Earth and the death of Earth and the life of Earth that I feel like don't adequately acknowledge what we mean when we refer to Earth. Like, do we mean all life, in which case we mean mostly bacteria and insects? Do we mean all mammalian life? Do we mean non-life, in which case we mean like rocks and running water?
Like rocks that, are kind of just like sticking together with gravity. Yeah. Kind of hard to ruin that.
Yeah, although I wouldn't totally put it past us, but I agree. Anyway, I think Elon Musk would spend a $44 billion on a pro-Earth campaign, which would be both, we need to do a better job of making this a good place for humans and other animals.
Sure.
And we are, as a species, really interesting, really important, really cool. The universe wants, well, this is controversial, but whatever, it's Elon Musk. The universe wants to know the secrets of itself. The universe wants to be observed, and we are observing it in lovely ways, and we should do more of that. And then I think Elon Musk would save the last $1 billion, spend $43 billion on his pro-Earth campaign, which would also hopefully be like an expansion of healthcare access globally. And then with the last $1 billion, and I realize I'm getting mission creep here, Hank, but whatever, it's Elon Musk, not me. With the last $1 billion, Elon Musk would save it. And on January 1st, 2028, he would launch the first manned mission to Mars.
I mean, there's issues. One, it wouldn't get there for a while. Two, $1 billion isn't enough. Three, I think Elon Musk is way weirder than you think he is. I think Elon Musk would be like, what if I just get like a bunch of Hollywood A-list actors together and we make a movie and it's just for me? And it's called Mars Mission 14. And starring Elon Musk, Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Denzel Washington, and
no women. It's all
dudes. Yeah, he wants to have a dude time, and they smoke cigars and they do dude stuff.
Yeah,
and everybody gets paid $100 million. Everybody comes around.
Yes.
Jay Leno is there. President Biden is there.
Mm-hmm.
Ed McMahon is there, but like dead.
Yeah,
just like his bones.
It's just my ghost.
My ghost,
starring Jay Leno, Denzel Washington, and my ghost, is the new hit Musk World.
Yeah, Musk World. Oh, Musk World is a much better title. And then,
thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, he could, make like the biggest spray paint can ever.
Sure,
he could get that paintball. I bet he could go get that paintball.
Yeah, he could get it really into paintball. Yeah.
No, the paintball in Indiana or wherever it is.
Oh, yeah.
Largest ball of paint. He could go get that. That's his name.
Buy the world's largest ball of paint for $5 million, but continue to let Michael Carmichael run it.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. That's a great use of resources.
I just think like
all of these things, by the way, can you imagine? I mean, $44 billion. That's all I want to say about it. $44 billion. All right.
This question comes from Ellie. I like it. It says, hello, it's Ellie.
Hi, Ellie.
I was just wondering, how important do you think it is to have consistent beliefs? Is the justification that humanity is absurdly complex enough to rule out my inconsistency? By the way, I love your philosophy thing, Owen, Crash Course. It's really changed my life. Thank you, Hank and John. It does feel a lot like philosophy should be more open with the fact that it's just a bunch of thingos.
It's a bunch of thingos.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, if you think about it, everything is a bunch of thingos.
Yeah. Yeah, a bunch of little thingos. If it sounds, yeah, I don't know if you can hear the background noise in my office, people at home, but it's so cold that I have to have my heater running right now.
Otherwise, we understand. We want you to be comfortable.
So, John, how important do you think it is to have consistent beliefs?
I think it's a worthy goal, but I think it's, I think first off, your beliefs should change over time because the evidence available to you changes over time. And so your beliefs should change over time. But I also, and also just because like your life changes, your circumstances changes, the people you know change. And so I think like we have to make room for that, which sometimes we struggle to do on the online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we struggle to let people change, especially to let people change in public. It's hard. But I think there will always be inconsistencies in almost all lives and value systems. I think there will always be places where we are more alive to certain injustices or certain inequities than others. And I think the main thing that we can do is be conscious of the fact, I just think life is extremely complex. There are tremendous complexities once you drill down into the big problems that we face. Like I was at the Partners in Health Board of Trustees meeting in Boston last week, and I was reminded that when you drill all the way down to the work that has been done over the decades to expand access to HIV treatment, expand access to multi-drug resistant tuberculosis treatment, there's a lot of complexity. It is not easy or straightforward.
No.
It's really hard and complex and difficult and nuanced and involves a ton of listening. And, you know, it really isn't as simple as we make it seem from the outside. And I think every problem is like that.
Yeah. Well, yes. And I occasionally will run across somebody who has a really well-formed view of the world and their place in it and seems to be very consistent over a long period of time. And I think that, like, that requires a certain amount of sacrifice of nuance, but it's also valuable to them. And I think that it also allows them to do certain jobs well. I am not like that. I want to allow, and sort of naturally do allow, my perspective to wander and my certainty to wander. I think that there is nothing that we can actually be certain of. There's very little that we can be certain of. You know, you can like sort of say what a square is and what 2 + 2 is. But beyond that, there's very little that is for sure not even knowledge. And I think that we have to allow for that. And I think that it's very normal for us to even once our views do change, to kind of believe that it didn't, or that we always kind of believe the thing that we do. This is a constant weird thing in psychology, that when a mind actually changes, it's most effective at changing when it doesn't even recognize that it happened. And that's wild. It's wild. Like, our minds are very complicated, very weird. We do not have as much insight into them as we imagine that we do. And I think that we... That if I look back on sort of the things that I wrote 10 years ago and think, wow, I really had it all together, and I am that person exactly, I don't know, it feels a little bit like a failure to me. I continue to grow.
I think that's a really good way of thinking about it.
I think that consistency of perspective and consistency of worldview is something that it's like a loyalty to a former self who doesn't exist. And I don't want to have
that. Right. Yeah, but I think you become more loyal to that former self who doesn't exist when that former self is still present tense in public in the form of old Instagram posts or old TikToks or whatever.
Well, especially if those things are like observed and brought back to you for you to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I'm fortunate that I wasn't on the internet really when I was in high school, at least not in a posty kind of way.
Yeah, not like public.
Because I don't know anybody who still agrees with their 16-year-old self when they're 45 about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to talk to them. I would be fascinated to meet them because that is not my experience. Like I feel like I've learned and changed so so much. Like, I was just thinking about the fact that 8 years ago, which is the last time the U.S. was in the World Cup, the Fault in Our Stars movie had just come out like 2 weeks earlier.
Wow.
And that's been a long 8 years. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about parenthood. I've learned a lot about adulthood. I've learned a lot about how to like conduct myself in public, how to be a member of a community online, like all kinds of different things. And like, if I hadn't, I agree with you. It's a little bit of an indictment of the last 8 years. If I didn't learn anything, if I didn't look back and say like, oh, I was naive about this and, you know, a little bit, underappreciated the significance of that.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some stuff that's at the root that I think that that you can keep consistent, but,
sure.
Yeah. But also yes. Like sometimes not. You're always like, we're always updating our frameworks and like we,
yep.
Our minds are imperfect. There's no doubt about that.
Yep. I love the idea of having a framework that you work with, but that can be updated,
yeah.
You know, like, I mean, when I look back at who I was in college or in my early 20s, like I thought I was going to become a minister. And so all of my frame or most of my moral and ethical framework for thinking about the world was came to me from the Gospels in the New Testament. And I still think that's an important framework for me. You know, I think, but it would not be accurate to say that it's like the primary framework or like the only way I think about those questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's like Paul Farmer used to say, I believe in God, but I also believe in lots of other things, which I thought, I just think is such a great answer to that question.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, as you believe in lots of other things, like that helps inform that value system that you grow and change with.
This next question comes from Bill, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, can you tell me who has the authority to assign collective nouns? My wife told me today that a ballet of swans is a thing, and I was vaguely outraged. Where does this come from? Pumpkins and Penguins, Bill, Australia." I think you're right, Bill. I think that there was a sudden time. So you got like a school of fish, and I'm like, okay, fish are like 86% of animals. So like, yes. They could have a special word and it could be school.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
You can have a flock of birds like, again, most just like a huge number of the things. But once you like suddenly every group had a thing that you got like a Congress of somethings and a murder,
right,
of crows.
A murder of crows.
And then it's like, well, what's a group of dodos called? And I'm like, I don't care. There aren't any. There's one skin in a museum, and it doesn't need a collective noun. Suddenly everything needed a collective noun. I just don't think it does. I think that the word group exists, but it became fun for there to be one for everything. And then somebody somewhere who had a website thought that they were in charge.
I don't think it's, you know what? I bet if you drill down, it's probably more complicated than that. Just like everything else.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. It's just
Hello.
The people at Mental Floss.
This is me.
It was like you.
Me when I was 24.
Yeah.
I was
we were like, what the heck are we going to call baboons?
I definitely 100% wrote an article about Mental Floss that was like, you won't believe these unusual group names for animals. 100%. I don't doubt that for a second. So if anyone's to blame for that, it's me.
Yep.
This question makes me think of something that is important that I feel like I need to reveal to the public, which is that yesterday, I almost, you know how sometimes I get mad at people on Twitter, Hank? I don't know if you know about this. But
yeah,
sometimes when I'm on Twitter, I get really like emotionally activated. And I think this is unusual. I don't think anybody else has this problem, but I get really angry.
Yep.
And somebody says something mean about me and I get really mad.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost wrote in response to somebody saying that like, what one powerful person thinks, if they're really powerful and smart and brilliant, is what the public should think. I almost wrote, what is good for the goose is not always good for the gander, because I believed until yesterday that a group of geese was called a gander.
Oh, that's, I mean, why not? Gander is a really weird word for male goose.
And so I was like, oh, God, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I've heard that a million times. And it means what's good for one thing is good for many of the same things, right? And so I went online.
Do you know what that would actually be if you wanted to say that? Because it's a really wild sentence.
What's good for the goose is good for the flock?
No. What's good for the goose is good for the gaggle.
That's actually so much better.
It's great.
In fact, you know what? I would like to coin a new aphorism. Even though I don't believe it, yeah. I do not believe this.
Yeah, but somebody does.
What's good for the goose is good for the gaggle. Everybody says it. Everybody knows it's
back,
true.
Yeah, back in high school, I would have thought that was true. I get a lot of people on Twitter who seem to think it's true.
If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gaggle. If it's good for me, it's good for everyone. I am the goose. You are the gaggle. And what's good for the goose is good for the gaggle. I'm really into it now. It might be my new favorite sentence. Never again will I say what is good for the goose is good for the gander. I guarantee you that, because from now on, I'm only thinking in terms of gaggles.
Ayo!
Can I?
My McMahon.
That was good. I liked it a lot.
The Oxford English Dictionary has commented on this, John, who decides what collective nouns are for things. They say, who decides? The short answer is no one. Love it. Love it. Just really commit there, boys.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that's probably the truth. They're telling the truth. We all decide together. That's how language works.
I guess it is. And also, there is a graph of the increase in the use of the phrase murder of crows. And it still has nowhere near close to flock of crows in normal use. Whereas pride of lions really took off in the 1940s and has never come down.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Do you know what a group of blowfish is called?
A blue?
No, John, it's called a hootie. That's not a joke. Next. That's not a dad joke. That's true. It's a true fact. Someone decided it, and now it's called that.
Yeah. Is it called that, or is it called that only on websites that reveal what a group of animals is called? Having written for one of those websites, let me tell you that we don't go out and, like, pull 1,000 adults what they call a group of blowfish.
It is not commonly used in everyday vernacular, turns out. But can we do it? Can we do it? Can we do it?
Can we do what?
Just the Dear Angus and John audience. Can we make it a hootie of blowfish?
I don't know if we can make it a hootie of... I feel like a hootie of blowfish, that's already kind of like happened or not happened. Is there any animal that is in need of a noun? That's the real question.
Pelicans.
Like it's a... Is there not a group of... What is a group of... Do pelicans gather in groups? Do they flock?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch. There's like five.
What is a group of penguins called?
A group of pelicans. One of the group of pelicans collective nouns is brief. A brief of pelicans.
No.
From the pelican brief.
Because of pelican brief,
yeah,
that's
but
dumb.
But far better is a squadron. Yeah. They are absolutely a squadron of pelicans.
Yeah, they do give off big squadron vibes.
Yeah.
What about penguins? Do they have a group
I'm
name?
I'm sure they do.
It's like a huddle of penguins,
that
I think.
That sounds great. Yeah, yeah, you're right. It could be a raft or a huddle or a waddle.
A waddle of penguins is cute.
John, this next question comes from Adia, who asks, Dear Hank and John, how do I stop swearing without seeming like a dweeb? I want to stop swearing in like a cool and interesting straight edge way. But sometimes I think that when I replace swear words with non-swears, it comes off as stuffy, maybe religious. I live in Utah and doing anything that aligns with dominant religious culture here can be stressful image-wise. For those of us who are not religious, that's a well said.
Sure. I would say you've just got to have very unusual.
Yeah. You
got to
come up
words.
With something good.
I'm a big fan of, I've been using one lately.
Yeah.
Bumble snort.
Bumble snort.
Oh, just bumble snort.
That definitely has big dad vibes.
Oh God. That's the only kind of vibes I can deliver right now.
Real big guy.
Yeah, whenever I
got
say,
kids old enough that I shouldn't curse in front of them vibes.
Whenever I say it, my kids do kind of cringe now that you mention it.
I've always not liked a number of things about curse words. I certainly, you've come to the wrong place, Adia, because I curse all the time. But there are some things that I don't like about them. They tend to be, they spawn from shame around taboos, whether that is sex or body stuff or a lot of that. So poop, you know, is like the curse word for poop is very much like, you know, because there's like taboo around body stuff. But So I like one of my favorite curses is poop on a stick, because now it's no longer, you've not, like, the curse is no longer that it's the poop that we're ashamed of. It's that this is now a, like, everyone agrees that poop on a stick is bad because you've turned it into a weapon and you're going to get it on somebody and nobody wants that. So I will occasionally stub my toe and shout out poop on a stick. But there, it is very difficult. Like, there's a lot of complexity around the social understanding of curse words. And I know this, having grown up in Florida, where cursing, I mean, in the social circles I traveled in, it was very normal to curse and very unusual to not curse and would have been noticed. And now I make content on the internet where anybody can see it. And I do get a lot of feedback from people that's like, I'd really like you to curse less. And on Vlogbrothers, we don't curse. We don't curse very much on Dear Hank and John. But in a lot of places, on my TikTok, on Twitter, you know, I'm just being me and I'm speaking the way that I speak. And it's very hard. It's both hard for me to not curse. And also, it's about the sort of image that I am attempting to project. And it's very hard to project the image I want to project without using the language that I know how to use to do that with. But I do get lots of people who are like, I don't know why you do that. It turns me off your content. It's also true of my books, which is weird to get, like, Amazon reviews that are like, this is such a great book, but there were so many curse words. And I'm like, I just don't see them. They're invisible to me. It's just, like, not a part of my system of taboos. Certainly, I understand that it's part of many people's system of taboos, and so I do try to avoid it in lots of situations. But, man, I tell you what. I don't know how to turn it off. So, and also, you kind of can't get the curse word thing out of a not curse word because that's, like, they're powerful, because that's their power. So you kind of can't do it. But I think that you can just, instead of replacing them, just not, you know, you can just not do it. And that's probably what I would suggest in the end, that there is a way of using normal language. Well, I don't know. Because, oh my God, of course, like, that's what I default to, is to be like, you stub your toe, you say, oh my God, that hurts. But you can just skip it and just say, oh, that hurts. There's lots of noises that one can make that are not even words. So that might be one of the ways to go, is noises. Ah! Like that.
Oh.
Ah!
Yarr. Ah!
That is some... Ah! Right there.
Yeah. Nope, not that one. I feel like that one was too hard. More like, meow.
That was just like kind of a very satisfied cat. Now the cat has a hairball. It's not great. Which reminds me, John, that this podcast is brought to you by a very satisfied cat. A very satisfied cat. His name is Gummy Bear, and he lives in my house. And every one of his needs is taken care of.
Aww. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Ed McMahon's Ghost. Ed McMahon's Ghost, haunting America since 2009.
The podcast is also brought to you by The Gaggle. The Gaggle. What's good for the geese is good for it.
Is good for the gaggle. It's what's good for the goose is good for the gaggle.
What did I say?
What's good for the geese is good for the gaggle, which is true, also true, but a little bit of an easier observation.
Yeah.
And today's podcast is brought to you by watching television while podcasting with your brother.
No!
Dot, dot, dot.
I don't know about that.
So listen, y'all, you've heard me tell a lot of stories about Policy Genius over the years. Policy Genius, just to be clear, is not an insurance company. It's a marketplace that helps people find and buy insurance. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. So I know we talk a lot about death on this podcast, and then we use that talk about death to talk about Policy Genius, but for real, for serious, you probably need life insurance, and Policy Genius is a great place to get it. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Policy Genius, because you will leave behind people who love and need you. That's not their tagline, but, you know, I like it. So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now, or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
Do you have another question for me
before
we get to the all-important news
remarks?
Whoa. What? Actually, Hank, I know we have to answer questions.
Yeah,
and I do want to answer one more question before we get to the news from Mars and Nancy Wimbledon, but I also want to ask you a question.
Okay.
That is from me.
Okay.
It goes, Dear Hank, comma.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does a correlation become so strong that it starts to suggest some level of causation?
What?
Like, is there a point, like, let's say every morning you flip a coin and your days are good when it's head and bad when it's tails.
Yeah.
Now, this is random, obviously. Let's say that it happens for 7 straight years. At some point, that correlation starts to at least maybe be causative in ways that we may not fully understand. Where is that point?
I mean, there are various statistical methods to figure that out, and it's going to be different in different kinds of sciences. But what's important there is not that like correlation never implies causation. It's that correlation does not necessarily imply causation, but it does imply that there's something to look at. And so then you do research around that to figure out what the thing is. So if John Green never tweets during an AFC Wimbledon game and they lose every time, and then he doesn't tweet during an AFC Wimbledledon game and they win every time, then you have is there a point at which you say, let's look and see if maybe there is some connection here? And I would look at that as a scientist, and I would say, well, there is no mechanism for that cause. There's no way for that action to have that effect. And so you can't,
on our current understanding of the universe. Yes,
there's no experiment to do there. So you would write it off.
There is an experiment to do, but I'm not willing to do it.
No, there's no experiment to do to drill down into the causality.
Okay.
So there's no way we could do an experiment on, we could do an experiment that would further figure out whether there's correlation. We could continue to define the statistical correlation, but we could not do an experiment that would help us figure out causation, because there's no hypothesis for how the mechanism of action would work. Which is a trick sometimes in science, because if you don't know how a correlation could be being caused, but you know that it does exist, then that's kind of the end. Like, you can't, like, there isn't that much you can say about it except that the correlation exists until you develop some kind of hypothesis for how the mechanism might actually work.
Well, let me follow up that question with one more question. That answer was very helpful. In your experience, having been on the podcast with me for a number of years, would you say that whether AFC Wimbledon win or lose a game is about a 50-50 proposition?
I don't have it. No.
You would say it's probably not about a 50-50 proposition, right?
Like,
which do you think is more likely, winning or losing?
Losing.
It's losing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think we all know that.
Yeah. At least at the moment.
So, So we're gonna let's start from there. It's not a 50-50 proposition, but if it were, there would be a 1 in 512 chance that this could have happened. But it's not a 50-50 proposition, so there's a less than 1 in 512 chance that this could have happened. All right, what's our last question?
That's weird. Well, before we get to our last question, this this is a Project for Awesome message from Maeve Lindsay Outlaw to Charles Lindsay Outlaw. Charles, thank you for a wonderful first year of marriage. I so appreciate you as a dog dad, a husband, and a nerd fighter. And large thanks to dear Hank and John. I'm confident that between our mutually compatible television tastes and Catholic engagement encounter advice, we will continue to grow and love for many years to come. Ellie, Rowan, and I love you.
Aw, that's so sweet. I do love a Catholic engaged encounter.
I love that that's the name of it. It sounds very dramatic.
There's no weekend of my life I think about more often than my Catholic engaged encounter.
Yeah, it's good. It's probably a good idea.
I mean, there was a lot to recommend it. There were some parts where I was like, I'm not totally bought in on this. The most notable section being the portion of the program that was hosted by the people who were telling us that the rhythm method worked.
Wow.
Who were pregnant?
That's very Catholic.
They were pregnant. So we had this whole like 1 hour. We had this whole 1 hour section of the Catholic engaged encounter. I've probably told this story before on the pod, but it never gets old to me. We had this whole 1 hour segment where this couple was like, hey, the rhythm method really works. And you don't need to use birth control, which is against the teachings of the church because the rhythm method is so effective. And at one point, Sarah raised her hand and she said, I'm sorry if this is inappropriate, but aren't you pregnant? And the woman was like, yeah, pregnant with my sixth child.
Every one of them entirely intentional.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess that's how, if it works, it works. All right, let's move on.
This next question comes from Emma, who asks, Dear Hank and John, I'm watching / rewatching old Vlogbrothers videos and just watched Hank's episode on Oumuamua. Can you provide an update? Do we know more about it?
Oh.
Not the award, Emmy. Oh, yeah. I guess that is a name.
All right.
Are you Ed McMahoning me right now?
No.
Sounds like something Ed McMahon would say.
I don't know about that.
So, if you don't know what this is,
I Ed McMahoned you for like 4 straight minutes without getting caught while you were talking.
What was I talking about?
Well, you were talking about correlation and causation because you were into it enough.
You
didn't catch me. But then when you're reading, I got to be careful
this
superpower I've just discovered. It's a little bit like when Spider-Man first gets his powers. It's a little too much almost.
So if you remember, John, Oumuamua was, Ed continues to be, this object that visited our solar system from elsewhere, came in, shot out. We could tell from its orbital trajectory that it was not of here. And it was like the first time we ever spotted a thing from somewhere else. And that's not because it's the first one that's been by. It's because our telescopes are getting better. And so we're better at spotting stuff like that.
Mm.
In fact, we have spotted another one since, though it was less weird than Oumuamua, which was... It behaved strangely, and we are still not to the bottom of it, and we probably never will be. So, like, one of the frustrating things about it is that, you know, we spotted it, and then, you know, you can only get so many telescopes pointed at it so fast, and it was always quite far away, and then it was going farther and farther away until we couldn't see it anymore. You can't catch up to it, so we'll never know, probably, exactly what it was, unless we find some other objects that have very similar characteristics. But, the good news is, seems like other stuff's coming into the solar system fairly regularly that we can spot. And
similar stuff?
Not the same. So Oumuamua seemed to be really long, like almost cigar-shaped, which is very unusual. Mm. You wouldn't think that would happen. But the idea is, the thought is, that these are objects that form in the early stages of solar system formation, and then they get kicked out by cold gas giants like Neptune. So there's just like gravitational stuff is happening. And then there are these chunks of stuff that get, you know, some of them get tossed into the Oort cloud. Some of them get tossed all the way out of the solar system. Some of them crash into the planet, et cetera. And there's probably a lot of stuff like that in the galaxy that's floating around that just got kicked out of solar systems when they were forming early on. And the one thing that has been proposed for Oumuamua that we had not, when I made that video, had not proposed is that it's basically like condensed hydrogen gas that would have to be in a really specific circumstance in like a, what they call a molecular cloud. So this is like before a solar system starts to form, there's enough density of atoms and it, but it's still very cold. So they haven't like crashed into each other and started to like crunch down with gravity so that there's heat. So it's very cold, but there's still enough stuff that it's starting to collect together. And then you get like this, maybe this like shard of pure solid hydrogen. And that maybe got kicked out in the early stages of a solar system's formation, which maybe explains, like it's more of a crystal than it is formed under the pressure of gravity. So it would maybe form in a weird shape. But I don't know. That's the sort of like update from the understanding of Oumuamua since I made that video. But the only way that that question is going to get answered is if a similar object happens by, which it seems to me likely. Like if you get one, like if the first thing of something looks one way, probably it's not a one in a billion chance. It's probably more like a one in 100 or less chance. Right.
Because we haven't been looking that long, that widely for things that look like that.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Well, that's cool. Science is amazing, man.
It's really cool.
It's really like I think sometimes we need to do a better job of, and I know that this is like a huge part of your professional life, so I'm preaching to the choir, but when we do a good job of communicating what science helps us understand about the universe and our place in it, I feel like we kind of like make the case for humanity in some ways. We're like, look, we're doing interesting stuff together.
Yeah.
We're figuring out cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are a number of cases we made for humanity, but I think that's definitely one of them.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about how to make the case for humanity to humans. I feel like weirdly, it's pretty easy to make the case for humanity to rocks. I feel like, they're like, sounds good, man.
We are some among the most difficult to convince of the objects on Earth.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the mammals are probably like, hey, it seems this is a little out of control.
Yeah, dogs are like, humans are great. You do not have to convince me of that. They seem awesome.
Yeah, Canada geese are like, I don't know about humans as individuals, but as a species, they terraformed the whole freaking planet for us. Like, this is great. Like, you guys call these things golf courses. We call them heaven. And
you just keep making more of them.
And as everybody knows, what's good for the goose is good for the gaggle.
Oh, John, okay. Tell me what's going on in AFC Wimbledon world.
We are indestructible. We are undefeatable. As long as I do not tweet while we are playing, we are incredibly, incredibly good. I am so grateful to Phoebe, longtime AFC Wimbledon fan and listener to this podcast, for pointing out to me this correlation, as you call it, wherein it does rather seem that when we do, so far, when I don't tweet during a game, we just cannot stop winning. We beat Tranmere over the weekend. A couple things very notable about this game against Tranmere. This is coming off beating top of the table Leighton Orient 2-0. We won this Tranmere game 2-0. And Tranmere are a little above us in the table. And they did get a red card like 20 minutes into the game.
Oh, wow.
And boy, was it a deserved red card. We've got this player. He used to play for Wimbledon and now he's back. His name's Harry Pell. I call him Hell's Pells. Mm-hmm. And Harry Pell, he knows how to be very difficult and unpleasant to play against. And I love it. I love that this new Wimbledon is becoming unbearable. It's a beautiful thing to watch. So we scored one goal that was good, but then we soaked up a ton of pressure even when we went down. So we scored one goal. It was from Ethan Chislett, but it was kind of a setup from Ayub Asal. Ayub Asal is just so stinking good. Both Ethan Chislett and Ayub Asal are just wonderful players. And they're both players who were like told by the big football clubs in England that they were too small to play professionally, that they would like never make it at this level. And now they are really, really proving themselves. But there was a good goal by Ethan Chislett. Then we soaked up a ton of pressure even after they went down to 10 men. And then we gave up a penalty And I was like, oh, I've seen this script before. Mm-hmm. Up 1-0. Even though we have an extra man, we suddenly are like all disorganized in defense. We give up a penalty. I know how this script ends. We lose 2-1. I've watched this game 100 times in the last 5 years. But then what happened is that Nick Zanov saved a penalty.
Wow.
And it was a really good save.
Wow.
And so Nick Zanov saved a penalty, and then Ayub Asal scored a world-class goal. Some might argue a goal that was too good, because after Ayub Asal scored that goal, I felt like a bunch of teams in the Premier League and in the second division of English football, they were like, that was a good goal. This guy scored 9 goals in his last 8 appearances, and he's not a striker? Huh. I feel like that there's a little bit of that energy going on. There's suddenly there's like, hey, is Ayub Asal going to be a Wimbledon player in January?
Yeah. Could you just slow down a little bit, put some lead weights in your shoes.
Yeah. Or keep playing this way, but let's not talk about it online. You know,
no one writes stories about this at the very least.
This is a private thing.
No scouts allowed in the arena.
This is between me, Ayub Asal, and every League Two defense. He's just incredible. I mean, he's so good. He's only 20 years old. He's played for Wimbledon since he was 9.
Wow.
He's Wimbledon through and through. I love him. You'll remember, Hank, the very first time he made a professional appearance, he scored a goal against Shrewsbury. And after the game, the AFC Wimbledon media guy was doing an interview with him for YouTube. And the media person said, you must be very satisfied scoring a goal on your professional debut. And 17-year-old Ayub Asal playing as a substitute in the third tier of English football, answered, I won't be satisfied until I'm the best player in the world.
All right.
Whatever he has in his heart, if we could bottle it, we could solve a lot of human problems. I mean, he's incredible. I'm a little in love, Hank, if you haven't noticed.
Do you like it? It's great. I'm happy for you.
We are now top of the bottom half of the League Two table.
Nice.
That's right, Hank. 13th place. Can't be any higher in the bottom half.
That's great. I can't wait until you're last place in the top half. That's going to be very exciting.
Oh, it'll be thrilling.
I got in a hockey fight on Twitter last week.
I didn't really completely follow it, but it seemed like a hockey player was naughty, and you were like, this hockey player who was naughty should be suspended for naughtiness.
Yeah.
And then a lot of fans of the team were like, no, naughtiness is an essential part of the way that he approaches the game.
I mean, naughtiness is definitely an essential part. I mean, look, the way that this often works is that when young players come in who are going to be a certain kind of player— and they will be, and that's
Sidney Crosby type.
That's fine if they're that kind of player.
Oh, you mean like an enforcer?
Yeah, or just kind of a pest. He's more of a pest than an enforcer. But anyway,
A Harry Pell, if you will. you need somebody on your team who's like, I'm sorry, but that's not allowed.
Right.
If you elbow me in the face, I am going to make the biggest possible deal out of it.
Yeah. What Matthew Tkachuk did, which I find entirely inexcusable, is that after the play, the play was over, he slipped his stick into the mask of the goalie. Poked him in the eye.
No, you can't do that.
That's not you're not playing hockey. You're not making a mistake. You're not amped up.
No.
You're making a very conscious decision in a moment when hockey isn't even currently happening, which is almost assault. And I didn't like that. Now, a lot of people who are Tkachuk fans will say he didn't really hit him in the eye. He just was sort of like getting in there to needle him, and Quick's reaction was way over the top and he didn't actually get poked. And I'm like, I don't care. You don't put a stick inside of the goalie's mask.
No,
this man's eyes are his profession. It's all he has.
Yeah. That I do think that's a very important. Well, first off, it's not all he has. Let's not say that a professional hockey goalkeeper is only his eyes.
He's just two very large eyes, and pucks hit those eyes.
There's a famous Emerson poem where, or maybe it's a journal entry, I don't know, but it really stuck in my mind as being like a naked eyeball walking through the forest, like just observing. And I've always been like, God, that is gross.
So much bark.
I really do not like that observation. I do not want a naked eyeball.
Yeah.
It's got to have an eyelid for me. Otherwise, I really freak out.
Anyway.
I do agree with you, though. Like, you can't, the thing about sports is if you are hurting someone on purpose, you are hurting their ability to play the sport that you both love playing. And that's not okay.
Yeah, and there's a fair bit of that in hockey.
You can't do that.
And oftentimes what happens is when players come in young, they kind of have to establish themselves as having that personality, and they mild out after a little while. And I'm just hoping that that happens, because he's an amazing player. He's an amazing player. Love him. He's under like what he probably should have been for goals scored this season, but like he's got a huge future ahead of him, and I just want him to be like not a total in Mars news.
Good. What's the Mars news?
Perseverance has traveled an amazing distance, and you can look this up. You can just type in like, where is Perseverance now? You can see the map of where it has gone. And its main thing that it wanted to do, it wants to do a lot of things, but it wanted to, like, in terms of roving, it wanted to rove up to this delta that you can see in this image that's very clearly a delta. And then it's been at this delta sort of moving around, and it's just arrived at a new part of the delta. It's called the Yori Pass. So it's arrived there, and it's going to be collecting a new set of samples. So it had a sort of a little trek that it just took. And now it is there. It's near the base of this river delta in Jezero Crater, and it contains a substance called sandstone, which is made from the grains carried there by the water before settling into a stone. And that's super useful in the search for organic materials, maybe even biosignatures, which is why scientists are excited to gather samples from there. So very good, very exciting, great job. And it's gone so far, and it's, I don't know, how long has it been on Mars? A long time now.
A long time. A couple of years,
yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's so weird to think about like rivers running on Mars.
It is. But
we do
rivers
need to keep the rivers running on Earth.
Yeah.
We really need to make sure that we do that. Rivers are huge.
It's a geological process. It's very difficult to stop. Though it has stopped on Earth before, in times when it got very, very cold and we were sort of a full-on snow place. But somehow we got out of there.
Such an unstable joint, Earth. Like, I mean, our little moment has been reasonably stable compared to others, but it's such an unstable joint.
It's, honestly, I'd say it's fairly stable. Probably, like, galactically, I'd say we got a pretty, pretty
I'm sure
nice
it's galactically stable, but, like, on a
situation,
on a human term, stable.
Wow,
it's stable I don't know.
This current lack of stability is our doing, but it's not something we did on purpose.
I feel the fragility. I feel the fragility of Earth in a way I didn't as a child. Whether that's real or perceived, feel it.
Yes, it's certainly something that changes quite a lot. But it hasn't been an ice ball for a long, long time—billions of years—and that's great.
Yay. Well, Hank, thank you for potting with me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Yes.
And we're going to go record our Patreon-only podcast, This Week in Stuff, right now. So you can get that at patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. If you want to send us questions, that's at hankandjohn@gmail.com, which is a email address. And we cannot make this podcast without those questions. So thank you, everybody, for sending stuff in. There's always so many good ones. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown, don't forget to be awesome.